Hey everyone, welcome to My Two Cents with Tawanda Harris. This is a podcast dedicated to educators, for educators, and by educators. Yes, it's all about encouraging, it's all about sharing strategies, it's all about going on an educational journey with each other. You are not alone, and I hope that when you finish listening to this podcast, you feel like you went on a journey with educators around the world. Thank you for tuning in to My Two Cents. Even in a pandemic, education doesn't stop. In this episode, I had the opportunity to speak with Katie Mutares and Kristen Zemke, the co-authors of Read the World, Rethinking Literacy for Empathy and Action in a Digital Age. Listen in as they provide tips and insight on ways to make digital learning come alive in your classroom, even in this virtual space. Can you share with us your teacher journey and how it led you to the digital world?
I can start with that. This is Katie here. I think my teacher journey, I was always interested in technology. And when I started working in Chicago at our elementary school that Kristen and I worked at together, there was very, very limited technology. We had just a couple of, old computers that sat on the side of the room. And so that's where it started. And I really was just initially really using it for, kids typing papers and things like that. Uh-huh. But as my knowledge evolved and I started to develop a vision for what I wanted to do, it was a cool time because then the tech tools were finally starting to catch up. And our school was one of the first schools to do an iPad pilot program. And once we had some devices and they had cameras in them, that really opened up a lot of possibilities for thinking about what kids could do with the tech as opposed to what the teacher could do with the tech. And that was a huge game changer for me.
And my journey, kind of followed Katie's. I was really excited as a first grade teacher to see what was happening in fifth and sixth grade at our school. And we had a terrific tech coach, Carolyn Skiba, who really nurtured our passion for literacy and inquiry and helped us think through how we could scale that with technology. And so after seeing what Katie was doing, I started to do more with my first grade students, and it would be a lot of, talking head videos with one teacher device and kids just rotating through, sharing about a book or talking about their inquiry projects. Then I think somewhere around 2007 or 8, we started doing podcasts in first grade to talk about our inquiry projects. I know, now that I look back at it, I was like, wow, that was crazy. And that was just like a nudge from our tech coach too. But kids would like post their inquiry mural and then each tell their different pieces about it. And we would publish it to the web. And so that was kind of exciting. And then I think it was 2011, my classroom became one of the first to go one-to-one with iPads as part of an Apple pilot. And This was the iPad ones before there were even cameras on it. And that was crazy. But as we grew with it, I really started to see like, wow, I think these devices transform learning for developing readers and writers more than maybe anybody else, and like really looking for ways to connect back to that literacy piece. I think that's sort of where Katie and I are unique in this digital adventure, is that like we're looking through the lens of literacy and instruction, not coming to it from the technology end.
Mm-hmm. I know that you all posted this really, really great, it was a chart about, digital mini lessons and a suggested structure of that. And you start off by with the greeting portion. So the greeting, then teaching, showing, doing, and keep thinking. Can you share a little bit about how that process or that structure
came about and why you think it should be, or the importance of it being in that order?
Sure. I think, you know, Katie and I have crafted a lot of different digital lesson structures between both of our books, and really looking at like how we use what we know about child development and active learning from David Pearson's work, and think about, okay, how do we engage the most number of students in this learning experience? And so we've done a lot of digital mini lessons across the years for reasons beyond distance learning, but we were sitting about around talking about some of the things we thought would be useful for educators, and we just like really quickly we're able to come up with these ideas of following, you know, that gradual release of responsibility, mm-hmm. establishing that connection first, just like you would face to face. And then really thinking about the structure of the digital tool in crafting our language for instruction around things like, all right, now press pause and you go try what we just tried together. And when you're done, come back and press the play button and we'll continue with the lesson. Or we talk a lot in our book, Read the World, about what we need to do to read the world today. And we talk about rereading video, right? Like just like a complex piece of informational text, yeah. A video has a ton of content. And so we need to go back and reread that. And so Katie and I maybe talked about it for, I don't know, Katie, what, 10 or 15 minutes? And then we're like, this is something simple and replicable.
Yeah. And it, you know, it builds on the structures that we use face to face in the classroom, but there's a little bit of a tweak there because, you know, in the classroom, I think that we and many of the teachers we work with use a lot of different structures for bringing learning. You know, sometimes it's this explicit gradual release. Sometimes it's more of an inquiry-based approach. Yeah. But when we're looking at this specific scenario of distance learning, we realize that kids are responding best to, first of all, having that moment when they see your face, right? That greet where we're just saying like, hey friends, how are you? Like, I'm so happy, you know, to be teaching you today. And then it's a very, very explicit gradual release responsibility model because, you know, when we're doing like inquiry-based in the classroom, the kids have the benefit of having the teacher there to coach and they have their peers. And we're trying to make sure that all of our students can access the learning we're putting out there. So this structure just makes the most sense. It also helps keep things really lean and really short. You know, frequently, a lot of teaching organizations say like, keep your mini lesson to 10 minutes. And what I'm finding is with distance learning, those videos, like 10 minutes is too long,
yes.
Even for a video. It should take the kid 10 minutes with you saying, okay, pause the video and, you know, turn and talk to your stuffed animal or whatever. Mm-hmm. But if even the teacher recording for 10 minutes is too long. So it has to be, I think that really speaks to the need for us to be crystal clear on what it is that we are trying to teach kids that day and what work do we want them practicing.
Yes, I agree. A lot of the teachers or a lot of times when I'm working with grade levels, I talk about just the idea of less being best. Just not kind of throwing everything
yeah.
we can when it comes to content and just thinking about, just stepping back to think about what explicit skill or strategy do you want students to experience in this Zoom call? So yes, I definitely like the simplicity of that.
Yeah, and I think too, especially in like those asynchronous times, right? Like we will have a Zoom when we're all together potentially, but we're also thinking about digital mini lessons that we can say, okay, first watch this video, then go do the work, then watch this video and then go do the next bit of work, right? Like, so chunking it in pieces that are fluent and fluid for even young learners to follow and to be able to manage independently.
Definitely. I agree. It's helpful, especially when you have some schools that are receiving this type of support or training, or just being able to go through that thought process of what digital learning looks like in this space and how do I make my lesson 10 minutes while still keeping up with the expectation of my district or my school that they have set in place. So I the structure is definitely something that's helpful. And I think that's a battle for some teachers now where they're trying to, stick to the mandate or whatever the expectation is of their school or their district, but they still want to make it meaningful being 10 minutes or less, just total time. How would you say, any tips on how to make that balance or kind of think through what things are essential and what things could kind of be put to the side?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, I think I would start with the kids first and foremost. You know, there's a lot of external pressures and requests that are put on teachers in a quote unquote normal situation. And so I would really just be looking very carefully at what do these students need here and now. I would, be considering how can I continue to help them grow as readers? How can I continue to grow their reading life? How can I continue to grow their ability to think critically? And I think that teaching thinking spans any subject area. And so if I'm, looking at math, for example, I'm not worried about making sure they get the maximum amount of practice problems that I can push out. I'm really looking at how can I continue that process of working through hard things and having the mindset to come at a problem from multiple solutions, because I think that speaks to a greater purpose. Like, yes, we need to keep the skills going, but I think that there's this other layer of also realizing that the world around us is changing. And so those skills that our kids really need, do they need reading and math and writing? Absolutely. But they have to have a purpose to those things. And they have to have that perspective of how can I be a critical consumer of information? How can I be, an engaged civic participant? There's a lot going on there. So I think that...
I think ultimately what Katie's talking about is being a more responsive teacher than you ever have before.
Yes.
That's what we're looking at. What are the kids showing me they need today, right? And so we have to be the chief adjuster, because we are adjusting conditions on every front of our life right now. And that's a lot. Our young people are doing that too, and that's a significant ask. And so if we can respond to what they're showing us social emotionally, developmentally, intellectually, all of these different things, we can support them. I think when we look at time and what's the right amount of time, I think there the beauty of doing things digitally is that you can give instruction in several chunks, right? So if you're working towards a lesser amount of time, you can say okay, here are three videos. Try to get through them all today. If you can, right? If you're looking to expand your amount of time, I think what we can do is provide these same type of videos and invite kids to go deeper. So we just did this, maybe your keep thinking or your lesson wrap up would be so we just did this all together. Now, for the next 20 minutes, you go off and pick a book that you might have in your house, or you go off and look out the window and write that style of story using what we just worked on. I think, the differentiation too of making sure we're providing kids synchronous and asynchronous content is anything that is recorded, students can watch again and again and again. if need be, right? So like getting access to a mini lesson 3 or 4 times is a great support for some students. I think the other thing we need to really look at with time and these types of lessons is our digital lessons are oftentimes informing parents of the type of teaching and learning that their child is going to engage in for the next little bit. So thinking about like, okay, so now maybe we invite kids and a family member to do it. Or for kids that maybe don't have family support at home, that's the purpose of the video and that's why we're keeping it simple. One of my favorite things to do, you know, when we're thinking about time too, is establish long-term projects. Right? Like maybe where we introduce a digital strategy or an inquiry strategy on Monday, we do a little bit of practice together. Tuesday, we invite kids to research and think on their own Wednesday and Thursday. And then we come back together on a Friday and share what they've learned. You know, there's tons of student choice in topic as well as process, as well as like how they're going to share out. But we're practicing these skills for,
Chief Adjuster, that is so appropriate for this Chief Adjuster. Yes. Katie, you were going to say something.
Well, I think the most important thing that districts can be doing right now is listening to teachers and parents and kids and families.
Yes.
Because the worst case scenario is that they're allowing bureaucracy to drive their expectations. Mm-hmm. And that they're focused on getting through the curriculum. Yeah. And I see that mentality of like, we have to get through, we have to cover. And I'm not a big proponent of the coverage model of education. Mm-hmm. Because, you know, there's a lot of research that shows that it's not especially effective or long lasting. I think really teachers need the support and to be empowered to step back. Yeah. And look at their curriculum and their students and what their community and what's happening, and to make the decisions. Like, we have to give a little bit of professional judgment leeway back to teachers and to say like, mm-hmm. I trust you to make the decision that's going to work best for your kids. It might not be the outcome we set out for at the beginning of the year, but it's mm-hmm. the outcome that's right for them right now.
Mm-hmm. I agree. And I think it goes back to, even though in the structure that you all suggested for the digital mini lesson, starting off with that greet, that mm-hmm. social emotional check-in,
yes.
I think it's the same with adults. You know, we as educators, we're trying to provide instruction or a learning experience for students. But you're right in that we have to also just have a voice in what we think is best, because when we're plowing through a curriculum that means nothing but us simply recording a lesson, then who did it benefit? Versus, you know, I guess it only benefits a checklist, you know, being able to check the box and moving on. But in the end, our students don't benefit, and they're not a better learner because of what we kind of thrown together to plow through the rest of the year. So I totally agree.
And I think we're primed for that, Tawanda. Like, we are so steeped in reflection as educators that is a foundational practice for us, you know, thinking about what went well, what can we work on, right? What are our kids showing us they need? However, versus other industries, we haven't done this remote learning piece before, you know? And so creating time as administration for teachers to talk and to plan together and to reflect is a huge thing. And the language we're using with our teachers right now is, first of all, just like accept, right? Acceptance is the first key. Like, this is what it is, right? And like, we can't fight it. It's just going to be like this, right? Then we move into adjust. So like, what do we think will adjust or adapt really well to this digital space for our students. And then eventually we move into adopting some of the things we worked as part of our permanent practice, right? Like, we're going to be using more technology moving forward as a result of this. We also are going to be better prepared moving forward in case we have an event like this again. So really thinking along those lines of, accept, adjust, adopt, I think is helpful because it kind of breaks it down.
So as we think about the end of the school year and possibly going into the beginning of the school year in a digital space, what advice would you give to teachers to think about, you know, how their time could best be spent during, you know, as they're reflecting on what this will look like, or even closing out and being reflective in what they have already done?
I can start, Katie, and then maybe you can follow up. I think my advice would be that whatever you're doing, you are modeling for students. And so whether you are learning something new and saying to a class, hey, everybody, this is the first time I've tried this too, but let's learn together, right? Like, we're showing that growth mindset and that ability to try something new. Whether you are having a social emotional lesson and talking with students and being authentic and saying things like, yeah, you know what, Sunday, I had a rough day too, and I was just feeling frustrated that I couldn't see my family or friends, right? Like,
yeah.
I think the most important lessons we teach them right now is what we do next, you know, and like, how do we recover or like bounce back from some of these things? And so for educators, I think it's a great time to keep learning, you know, and whether that be like trying something new digitally or reaching out to a class via phone or doing like a book club with like four kids on a phone, just try to keep learning, because I think anytime we grow, that will benefit us down the road.
Oh, that's really good.
Yeah, I would say, especially definitely thinking about, you know, if this is our situation in the fall, if we have to start a school year this way, or if we start a school year and then have to go out again very quickly, that, you know, the main focus that we're really going to have to hit hard is that idea of community building. Mm-hmm. And thinking about how are we making connections with kids, because, mm-hmm. you know, the first month of the school year, it's about creating a class. It's about creating that community. Mm-hmm. It's about establishing routines. So I think that has to look a little bit different, obviously. But the intention of what we're doing is still there. And we're going to have to really go slow. Kristen and I always talk about, you know, really going slow to go fast mm-hmm. later. And that is going to be even more true, especially if we're faced with starting a school year through Zoom or Hangout or whatever platform you're using. We're going to have to really be intentional about making those connections with every kid, with establishing some norms for our interactions. But then I want to like add a caveat onto that, like establishing respectful norms that are age appropriate and respectful of learners, not like ridiculous out of control things. Like, you should, you know, I'm not going to say any, cause I don't want to name anybody. I think I would hope that most of our professional colleagues could use some judgment and think about like what is out of control or just in the name of compliance or control mm-hmm. versus things that we establish that are really like a need in order for a child to connect with you and learn. I'll leave it at that.
I agree. It's funny because I had the opportunity to read to Ariel Johnson's class, and it was so funny. Oh my goodness. That was a very entertaining experience for me. When I was in the classroom, I taught upper grade. So they had a lot more control in the classroom at upper grade. And she asked me, she said, do you want the, I kept asking them questions because I would pause from page to page and I would ask questions. And she said, well, do you want me to keep them on mute or not? And I said, nope, unmute them all. I want to hear their voices.
Yes.
And it was so fun. I mean, they're spinning in chairs. I could see every single face. They're under the covers, but they were fully engaged. And I think it goes back to setting those appropriate expectations. You know your students, and you want to make sure that you're making that connection first so that students feel like they are valued.
And I think, you know, like what keeps me going right now is the educator community. There are so many people out there trying great things and going above and beyond. And I think, you know, like Katie and I have been graced to be working in a digital learning environment for more than a decade now. So we feel like it's almost our responsibility, you know, to share what we've learned along the way and support people so that they can craft these environments that are student-centered, developmentally appropriate. But I think the biggest benefit of it is like the learning goes both ways, right? Like I'm learning from pre-K teachers at my school that have developed like classroom websites for pre-K that we work to make sure kids could use autonomously on their own. And then I'm looking at 7th and 8th grade teachers that are doing everything as an interdisciplinary unit, every single subject. And that's, you know, like this whole environment of snowball effect and cheering each other on just by sharing. And ultimately that gets back to our kids. Like we are motivated for our kids and we're going to keep learning in order to give them the best possible experience.
Yes. Well, thank you all, you both, Kristen and Katie, for just taking the time to just share your 2 cents with educators in this virtual learning space, or just how to, even when we do go back into the classroom, how to use technology as a way to enhance learning and not replace that humanistic side of just experiencing or growing together as a community. That was one of the things that really stuck out with both of your responses as far as how you are motivated to continue on, is that sense of community, that sense of growing and learning together. And to really know that as educators, this is not a silo experience. This is something that we do together for our students. Mm-hmm. So where can we find you on social media if we want to?
You can find me at Kristen Zemke on Twitter and at KristenZemke.com.
Awesome.
I am at Katie Muhtaris, Muhtaris on Twitter. And that's the best place to find me, really.
Awesome. Well, thank you again, Katie and Kristen. Continue being great for our students, our teachers, and just education as a whole.